Welcome back. You're watching Stock Watch with me, Bright Khumalo. Taking your questions on the line this evening are Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and Thamsanqa Netta from Shiloh Capital. Send us those questions via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. We start off with content from Bloomberg. As we know, Omicron has become the latest COVID-19 test for economic recovery. Here's a quick take from Commercial Bank of Dubai's head of investments on the market's action we've seen lately.
I think there are a few things that the market is trying to tell us. One, COVID remains the dominant force and the overriding force for the markets. At the same time, the entire recovery this year has been driven because of better than expected rollout of vaccines and therapies and so on. Yet on the other hand, we still have lockdowns, we still have supply chain disruptions, again, because of COVID, because of low vaccination levels. So in a way, probably the Omicron is a wake-up call for us to get the rest of the world vaccinated if we have to come out of these supply chain issues and if we have to resolve the issue of inflation, which we firmly believe is transitory, but it's being held back because of lower level of vaccination.
Evening, gents. Thamsanqa, Gary. How would you describe, actually, in your words, the past two trading days that we've seen, or three trading days, if you include the big dip of Friday, Thamsanqa?
The fear of the Anglo-Saxon, I would say. The British economy is shutting down us and our neighbors for not traveling and disallowing and putting us on the red list, I think has had ripple effects through our economy and the way things are viewed. I think globally there's been a panic because of what our amazing scientists have put together and helped the world identify a new variant which is ripping through large parts of Europe. So I think we just are suffering the backlash of very knee-jerk political reactions to a very scientific and researched output or outcome.
Yeah, and Gary, did you see these past few days as an opportunity maybe to pick up some long-term winners or long-term potential winners? Because, I mean, it was found in the end that, the Omicron variant is actually pretty mild, like just like Arsenal. So if you have to make, the football comparisons. So what I want to hear your views of, the markets from where we stand today, basically.
So I don't think it's unreasonable to look at the sell-off that we saw on Friday as quasi-justified, because the idea that we're going to go down 30% again because of the Omicron variant, I think is probably not going to be the case. But you look at it, and I think a lot has been priced in, as the Bloomberg commentator was saying, a lot has been priced into the recovery from COVID. And I think it was just a wake-up call, that COVID is still with us. Now, again, it does look like this variant is probably, and obviously there's still a lot of research to be done, going to be more contagious, but more mild, less fierce in the WHO's terminology. And that really means that, it's not so much about the mortality rates. It's about how the governments have reacted. And you can see the lockdowns and that have been put in place and the travel bans that have come through are having real world effects. I'm stuck in Europe, for example. So I was meant to fly back on Sunday and I can't get back to South Africa. At the same time, I'm sitting in Switzerland and people from the UK can't now travel to Switzerland either. So it's more wide-ranging than just the lockdown effects that South Africa's seeing. But I think the markets are starting to price in that sanity is going to return. So we saw the big sell-off on Friday, but yesterday we saw the travel and leisure sector up over 5%. You saw plus 13% gains from the likes of Sun International, City Lodge up almost 10% as well. So you can see that I think the market is starting to say, hey, wait a minute, this could have been a knee-jerk reaction. It does look like things could get back to normal. At the same time, if you look at the sectors on Monday evening that the S&P 500 was recovering into, it was very much tech-focused. Those value value sectors were lagging. The back to work sectors weren't recovering. So market may be telling you something there as well. But overall, you know, what does volatility tell you whenever there's volatility in markets? It tells you that there's uncertainty, and it tells you that there's fear.
Yeah, look, let's talk about stocks. We're gonna, I mean, this theme is gonna play around quite for quite some time because of the questions we're getting here. The first question, Tamsanga says, what are your views on Richemont? It's had a big run over the past 2 months, probably catching up to other luxury goods peers. Dividend is back at healthy levels too. Is it a buy, hold, or sell at these levels? This is Trevor Kunda, your friend on Twitter, Tamsanga.
I think at this level it's a hold. I'm not too sure if you can, the price levels are good for a buy. I think the rally is caught up with the likes of LVMH, which led the sector in terms of recovery and growth. So I think at this stage, if you hold, if you own, hold. If you don't, I think rather wait on the sidelines unless the price adjusts significantly downwards because of these COVID scares. I think the luxury brand market is a good market. I'm not sure if Richemont is the best of the pack to choose from. I think I would go the LVMH route. I think that would be my stock, which are back in that space. But if you are looking at Richemont in the luxury brands area, I think it's a good stock to own, just not at these price levels.
Yeah, look, talking about price levels, I know for a fact you were buying Richemont back in 2009-2010 for less than $20. Gary, so tell us, you know, what your thoughts are around Richemont. You know, maybe a comparison of what happened in 2009 as compared to now.
Yeah, so I think if you look at it, I mean, we've been a long-term supporter of Richemont. We have been in and out from a trading point of view. But I think it's always been a core position in portfolios, and there's a couple of reasons for it. So it takes some Tanker's point that LVMH is a very exciting company. It's got some incredible brands. The difference is that Richemont is obviously accessible via local markets, which makes it very useful for Regulation 28 portfolios, for example. So, we have supported Richemont. I mean, we were buying, we put out strong buyer recommendations on Richemont. I think it was around 100, it was about 150 rand a share at that stage, moving up strongly. And of course, as Tamsanga says, it's always difficult to buy in after a rally. You kind of feel like you're shutting the door off, the horse is bolted. But the fact is, this is still a very high quality company. If you look at it, solid institutional coverage. I mean, there's a dual listing on the Swiss exchange as well. It's currently trading at about 137 francs if you look at the Swiss market. And we've got a target price, just a median target price of, as I said, significant coverage on it, a median target price of around 150 francs. So that still gives you an indicative upside of around 10% in francs. Remember, there's no interest rates in developed markets. So taking 10% higher from these levels in Swiss franc terms, maybe. Again, I think you might see a little bit of the currency just playing onto the local exchange, the local exchange listing. If you do see the rand just firming up after that blowout that we saw, I mean, we can see just with the panic how fragile our local currency can be. And if we do get to any significant strength in the local currency, I think picking up a counter like Richemont, longer term, it's going to stand you in good stead, especially if we see more protracted weakness in the domestic unit. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, we're talking about the dollar. The dollar is at 10-year highs or whatever they are. So the dollar is more stronger than the rand being weak. So I won't look at the rand in a bad way or speak about it in a bad way for that matter. Tamsa Ngatahir is asking about Naspers. Do you think it will return to above 3,500 level? Is it a buy? And okay, he's asking about Avenge afterwards. I'll give Avenge to Gary.
I have a pet peeve about this, which we've discussed many times. Bob Van Dyke has wasted shareholders' time and money. He hasn't delivered any value. He failed to do the Deliveroo deal, and he wrote a great thesis, but failed to close on that one deal. He's making close to 200 million rand a year in salary, and he spent more money trying to close the NAV gap than discovering new opportunities to invest. My view is Naspers at this stage is really being held together by Tencent, which at this point is quite a big and mature company. So my view is Naspers should give it to shareholders and concentrate on actually finding new technology and internet business value. I don't think Bob Van Dijk is the guy to lead the business. They need to find somebody else who understands growth, development. And judging by what's happening at Microsoft, Google, and now Twitter, it may just be a tech guy from India who may be able to do the job for the business. And so I don't think at this stage Naspers will find those levels, because the money they have on their balance sheet hasn't been spent in finding and investing in viable ventures that have a sort of projected upside. It's all just now financial engineering. So my answer is no. If you hold the stock, keep it. But at this current stage, with this current leadership, I don't see the share being a growth or a continued value share over the long term.
Inga Group, the owner of IKEA stores worldwide, reported a jump in annual profits on the back of record demand for home furnishing. This is as people stay at home more due to the pandemic. The team spoke with the CFO on what's been the biggest change in the IKEA, in the way IKEA operates. Let's take a look.
Two things. From the consumer side, life at home was important, and today and after the pandemic, it's even more relevant than ever before. So that's why IKEA vision to create a better life for the many people fit very well in the current context. From the business point of view, we decided to make IKEA more accessible, affordable, and sustainable. And this is the biggest change that we are making in IKEA. At the same time, of course, as you say, we invested heavily in the business transformation, in the omni-channel transformation. And this has proven to be a formula for success over the last year. And lastly, we decided to accelerate our investment in climate positive in order to reach our goal in climate positive before 2030. So all in all, the agenda is about more omnichannel, more sustainability, and more affordability.
Gents, we're back. Inga Group, is it something you follow, Gary? And if so, can you tell me, you know, what did you make of the numbers? And obviously, we know that home improvement companies, the likes of Bed Bath & Beyond, you know, Home Depot and those type of stocks have been doing very well as people stay at home and spend more time at home. They're finding more and more problems in their kitchens, bedrooms, bathrooms, you name it. And they want to fix it, right? Because now they're starting to see these things they didn't notice because they would come back from home, sorry, from work, tired, and go straight to sleep or eat or whatever. So, yeah, so how has a company like IKEA benefited from all of this?
Well, I think if you look at IKEA's business model, they really were geared up for the change that's taking place in retail. So, yes, I think the focus on home improvement, sure, this is a trend that we've seen emerge throughout COVID. But I think IKEA is hopping on a larger trend than that, and that's the shift from the idea of having, you know, brick and mortar retail stores that are, you know, essentially mini warehouses that you'll go and collect your produce to more concept stores. And I mean, if you've walked around IKEA, I mean, you know, even 10, 15 years ago, the whole idea of an IKEA store was that it was one almost maze that you walked through. You could go and, you know, everything is set up as mini rooms so that you can go and understand the concept of, hey, that's the whatever Swedish name, the little couches over there and whatever table is there, and you can kind of get a very visual picture. You can go and sit in the chairs, you can go and feel the products, and then you just basically fill in your form, they go and get the flat pack and deliver the flat pack. Now, that model works incredibly well for a pandemic era stock, you know, and we can see it in their online sales, because, you know, once you kind of understand the quality of IKEA furniture, you can go on, you just get the measurements, you know, you're going to receive flat packs. So the difference between, you know, going to a warehouse store and collecting flat pack and just having flat pack delivered straight to your house is a very, very small jump compared to what the gross, let's say the grocers have had to make. So I think the stock has benefited from that. I mean, listening to the CEO, yes, talking about omnichannel marketing, yes, you know, talking to your customers on the social media networks and through the variety of channels that are required these days is incredibly important for marketing your product. But I think what's more interesting is this argument around sustainability and the idea IKEA wants to become a climate positive company by 2030. inflation. We've got a very, very strong, or stronger than we've ever had previously, at least, ESG focus. And I think that that's going to benefit companies in the next, say, 5 to 10 years incredibly if you're ahead of the curve. We know regulation is coming into place. And I think you're going to see a lot of the ESG indices and companies with a strong green focus doing significantly better than their counterparts.
Yeah. If I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying these big furniture and, you know, home improvement companies are benefiting a lot because they're used to the supply chain of X Factor, whereas retailers, they were not geared that way in the first place. So they have to actually create that back end, which is very interesting. Tamsang,
100%. So if your product,
sorry, you can go, Gary. Yeah.
No. I was just saying that you know, the typical store, you know, we like the idea of, let's say like beauty products, for example, instead of having it, you know, sitting in a department store where you go and try and select just on the basis of colorful branding, the idea of have a salon, you know, have something like what Long for Life is doing through Sorbo checks, okay. Have an experience that a customer goes and interacts with, and then comes away with an experience and then kind of identifies those positive memories with the retail brand, but they can do all the shopping online. So I think that is going to be the future of retail. And yes, like, it's not, you know, all the way there, but certainly a lot further down the line than many of the other retailers were.
Yeah, look, Tamsang, we've got a question from Anthony here. He's asking, can the panel give thoughts on Investec Bank? Is it a buy?
I think that's a tough one. My answer would be no. Their performance vis-a-vis the other banks and the wealth that has been created for other founders. I think the financial sector generally is a difficult one, especially the banks. They fall under regulation. And also, I think Investec with their offshore UK and I think it's Australia businesses and the unwinding of 91, I wouldn't say it's a buy at this stage, no.
Okay, let's jump back to Twitter. We have Matthew who's asking us about Tongaat Hulett. So what are our thoughts on Tongaat Hulett?
Let me jump in there quickly. I shared a view a few weeks ago. I think it's a lose-lose. They are basically a landowner that can't convert themselves into a property developer. I think the product they produce is in great demand. Sugar is, for lack of a better word, a drug. And people will demand it. However, they, as a producer, their structure, their debt, their market cap, it's going to be hard to sugar their way out. They're going to have to create a more multi-dimensional, especially land-focused property development approach to get rid of that debt, and then they can go back to producing sugar. So I'm not, and then there's also the rights issue with tremendous dilution. Yes. I'm not confident in that business and that management at this stage.
Yeah, and there's also some accounting shenanigans there. There's been a lot going on for that business. To add a sweetener, Gary, what are our thoughts on PPC?
Well, PPC is also a difficult one because if you look at PPC, I mean, the business also has gone through all sorts of trouble recently, but in the last couple of years. But it's also, you know, a business that's fundamentally requiring a construction boom. Now the business has changed slightly over the last couple of years, and in that it's not as domestically focused. With on the 2021 numbers, around 30, I think it's about 35% of their revenue is coming from you know, the international markets now. But I struggle to see where the. I mean, maybe if you do get some you know, infrastructure spending, this could be a net positive. But I just don't see it being implemented in South Africa. So still a little bit concerned around PPC as a business.
Yeah, this is it's always a hard one, especially considering that, you know, this time last year, this business was trading at like cents. It's now like over 5 rand. So you kind of missed the 10 bag, I hear. So I don't know where to from here. This is coming from Anesh. He says, where do you expect Sasol to bottom out? This is for you, Tamsang. I don't know what you mean, bottom out. This thing was trading also at close to nothing last year this time. So
I don't know
what you're looking for when you say bottom out.
I think Sasol is a view on management. They're disposing bits of the business that is non-core. They are restructuring, making sure they fix their balance sheet. So I think over time, they're going to be a great business. But I don't think we'll see that growth from nothing to a current price tag, as you said. Now, I think that was a special situation, much like PPC, much like Avenge. It's a special situation that occurred in the market that allowed such great value gain. But as a business, the management is cleaning up. Our view would be that over time they'll move into the sort of hold territory and give you some exposure to sort of fuels and future new energy.
Yeah, this is our last question, Gary. I'm going to ask you. This is around transaction capital. It's another one that's run a lot, unfortunately. So your thoughts on transaction capital?
Oh, you asked me the difficult ones. Yeah, transactional capital is not one that I cover. So, you know, it has had some tailwinds just because of the automotive market. So obviously, it does seem like an incredibly well-run business. And I've kind of said it on the show before that, you know, if you look at just what they've managed to do and kind of the sectors that are exposed to with SA Taxi, it does seem like a very, very savvy operator in the sector. But, you know, I'm kind of hesitant to give too much comment around, you know, price levels because it's not one that I follow.
Yeah, and Tamsang, your thoughts on transaction capital? I mean, the argument in the past was that, you know, these guys didn't have any competition and whatnot. Well, now they do. There's other businesses out there that are doing exactly, you know, the exact same thing that SA Taxi Finance is doing. And obviously, you have to speak about the new side of things with the acquisition, the big acquisition that they recently did.
Yeah, so it was my pick a few weeks ago. Shout out to Share Square 2, who's keeping us up to scratch. I picked it, and hopefully it'll pick Gary with his Tuniela pick. I'm lagging behind him, but I think it's a great business. They're financing a sector of the economy that has a big moat. So taxis have a big moat and are unlikely to be replaced anytime soon. They've entered into the retail car market, and CMH has shown what kind of value there is in that area. So I think with their ability in funding and financing, as well as understanding the parts and the taxi industry, I think they're well positioned to do well over the long term.
Yeah, and your stock pick for the evening, Tamsang? Stock pick time, unfortunately.
Purple Group PPE at these prices, anything between 190 and 220 is a buy for us. We think over time the stock is going to get to a 10, 12, 18 share price. We see them being able to lead in this sector. They are offering new offerings, Australia, property, the US, especially to retail. It's a much safer way than Robinhood. So I think there's scope for them going forward. So PPE is me.
Okay, and Gary, stock pick for the evening?
So I'm also going to go with Sibanye. So again, I'll also give a shout out to check ShareMate. You can go follow them at ShareSquare2.
ShareSquare2.
Is the ticker. They keep us honest by vetting all the picks. And he said, why haven't I picked Sibanye Stillwater yet? It's such a popular stock on the show.
Yes.
I have actually picked it on a lot of different forums. And I think, you know, if you look at Neil Fonderman and the team, it's a fantastically well-run mining company. Yes, it comes with all the risks that mining companies have. You know, it's going to be more volatile. It does. They are more speculative than traditional stocks. I think a very different prospect to something like compared to something like Richemont. But remember that this is a company that benefited incredibly from the consolidation of the South African mining sector. They were buying the right type of ore bodies at the right time.
Gary, you know, wrap it up, yeah. Out of time.
Okay, so yes, I think, like I said, like my entry price is probably between around 45 and 50 rand a share. We right at the top of that target band now, so now comfortable to start accumulating.
Oh, okay, cool. Thank you very much. So if for you it's Sibanye Stillwater, and for you Tamsanga is PPE. Thanks to my guests Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and Tamsanga Netta from Shiloh Capital. Stockwatch will be back again tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening. I'm gonna go get some more.